In chapter 6, verse 14, Paul makes a statement like this: "For sin shall not have dominion over you, for you are not under law, but under grace." Now, he develops that in the parenthesis from verse 15 down to the end of the chapter, 15:23. He uses a little parenthesis to show them and to rebut the idea that the believers should sin because we're under grace. And he said, no, that's not true. That's what that was last week. Now he comes back to, sin shall not have dominion over you, in 7:1. The spiritual man in the law is in verses 1 to 6. And then he's going to have the natural man in the law. So we start with the spiritual man in the law. The spiritual man is one who believes, who's controlled by the Holy Spirit. There are natural men who are not saved. There are spiritual men who are saved, but they're carnal. Paul calls them carnal Christians. And then there's the spiritual man who is saved and following the Lord through his word. So this spiritual man, and he talks about, first of all, the authority of the law, verse 1. He knows that the law's power ends at death. That's what he says in this verse. For do you not know, brethren, for I speak to those who are under the law, that the law has dominion over a man as long as he lives. Now, remember, Paul's writing to the Roman church, and in there are Jews. Probably all the early churches had mostly Jews, and then they reluctantly brought the Gentiles in as well. It's a Jew-Gentile church, and he asked them a question. Do you know? And someone has said that every time Paul says, don't you know this? He's expecting no answer. You ignorant people, don't you know? Usually you find that the answer is true. No, we didn't know that. But now the answer is yes. This time it seems to be they know what it is. So he's not speaking only of the law, the Mosaic law, but the law that they lived under, apart from Christ. So they might have even have said, you know, because it's a truism. Everybody knows that. And I think that's exactly what it is. The law has dominion over man as long as he lives. And the thing that's so truism is, after you die, the law can't touch you. Can't bother. Okay, fine. I owe that man $1,000. Too bad. I'm dead. The law can't touch me. Well, that's the idea, I think. But then, that's the authority of the law. Now, the analogy to marriage, verses 2 and 3. Now, verse 2 says, for the woman who has a husband is bound by law to her husband as long as he lives. But if the husband dies, she is released from the law of her husband. That also sounds like a truism as well. She's released from it. But this is true not only for the Mosaic law, but for the law of that day. Now, some marriages of that day were not very good. The husband's death was a relief. She's married to him, and more like a slave in those days. If he's a bad husband, she couldn't get divorced. No way to get divorced. If she gets divorced and marries another man, she's adulterous, and that, by the law, Mosaic law, she could be stoned. So it's like some of these people, some of these ladies, might have been like the lady I know who said, I don't believe in divorce, murder maybe. Well, sitting right back there. So just as your marriage toward the law before you met Jesus, our marriage vows express the very same thing. I've performed a few weddings, some present here, included in there. For as long as you both shall live. So, well, that's a little bit strange because it's as long as either one of you lives. If you both are living, I think that's the idea. Anyway, so that's true here. He shows the law's power ends at death. He has discovered two things. He discovered, first of all, the more thrilling way to victory. So then, if while the husband lives and marries another man, she will be called an adulteress. But if her husband dies, she is free from the law, so that she is no adulteress, though she has married another man. So I said that, but I didn't read it. I wanted you to see it. It's in the Bible. So he's going through a more thrilling way. If I'm trying to fight the law, that's one thing, but he has a more thrilling way. Verse 4. Therefore, my brethren, you also have become dead to the law through the body of Christ, that you may be married to another, to him who was raised from the dead, that we should bear fruit to God. So he's no longer trying to get the victory for himself. He's not trying for victory. He doesn't have to try for victory any more than he has to try for salvation. He doesn't have to try. The death of Christ is his death. He died to sin. And therefore the law has no power over him. Not only has he died with Christ, he has been raised with Christ. No more fighting the law, just yielding to Jesus. That's it. So all the sin that's around, the sin that's in here, the sin that's out there, none of that matters to the man, to the spiritual man. He is yielding to Jesus. The law doesn't affect him because he's dead to the law. The death of one partner, he has died to that, to the law. So it's a thrilling way. It's a much better way to live than trying to keep, well, did I do this? Did I keep this one? None of that. It's a thrilling way. But there's also, it's a more thorough way to victory. Verse 5. For when we were in the flesh, the sinful passions which were aroused by the law were at work in our members to bear fruit to death. The law's thou shalt not stimulates the mind to do that very thing. Did you ever see a sign, don't walk on the grass? The grass has some other meaning today, but we're talking about the grass that grows on the ground. Doesn't it make you want to walk on the grass? Yeah. You make, no, I'll walk on your grass. And maybe on the corners. You ever see people with a lawn there, and there's a corner over here, and somebody has started a foot, 2 feet, shortcut. The next person says, I'll take that shortcut. Pretty soon you got a path. I've seen so many paths. And I wonder if that's the reason. Can't tell me not to walk on the grass, I will. I was in the Navy. I've been thinking about that since a couple days ago. I was at a Naval Air Station in Pensacola. That's where I spent my time. I was there at Naval Air Station, and some people who were there had been to the Naval Air Station in Norfolk. And he said, and I don't know if it's true or not, but they said, they had signs on their lawns, dogs and sailors keep off the grass. Well, you imagine what the sailors did, and the dogs, they didn't care about anything. Anyway, the sign, it just rouses something in you. The law says, don't do that. Why can't I do that? And Dr. Ironside said, I go to the subway platform, and I see a sign, no spitting on the floor. Now, that was back in tobacco days. And you can't swallow that stuff. I tried it one time. Bad. Feel like you have a concrete block down there. And the subway said, don't do that. No spitting on the... And he said, I looked around, and it was all over the place. And then he said, I went into a home. There was no sign. But I looked around, and no spitting. It was the sign, he said. The sign made him do it. Well, anyway, that does happen. It's like Satan in the Garden of Eden. God said, don't eat of that tree. Did he say you can't touch that tree? Of course, he spread it all over. And she said, oh, no, he said we can't eat of it. God knows that if you do, you'll be like God. You ought to try that. And Steve Brown says, I can't talk like he does, I wish. It's a lie from the pit of hell, and it has the smell of smoke on it. And that's what happens. So the kind of thinking is, well, but now, he says in verse 6, we have been delivered from the law, having died to what we were held by, so that we should serve in the newness of the Spirit and not in the oldness of the letter. See, at salvation, the change in our lives is not just for the future. It's also for the present. We have exchanged masters. We have a choice to whom we serve. Before, we only have one chance. You serve the law. Now we have a choice. We can either serve the law or we can serve the Spirit. So the spiritual man is delivered from the law. Now, he comes to the second part of the message, and that is the natural man and the law. The spiritual man is delivered from the law. The natural man and the law is verse 7 to 13. The natural man is defeated by the law. Spiritual man delivered, natural man defeated by the law. There has been much discussion about this section, by the way. Some say it represents the period between the fall of Adam and the giving of the law. That is, from Adam to Moses is the time, and then when the law came. Well, I don't think that says that. I think rather, it seems to me that it represents Paul's personal struggle with the law during his unconverted days. I believe that's the way I take it. The verbs are past tense back there in Paul's experience. And in 14 to 25, when he talks about Paul's experience as a believer, they're in present tenses. So back there in my unsaved days, that's where he is. So the law reveals a fact of sin, verse 7 says. What shall we say then? Is the law sin? What do you think he said about that? Mi yeneto! No, that's his curse word. Oh, mi yeneto. That's his favorite word. Well, I would not have known sin except by the law, for I would not have known covetousness except the law said, you shall not covet. See, the law, is the law sin? Of course not. Where did we get the law? From God. Would God give you anything sinful? Of course not. So the law is not sin. Paul later says in verse 12, he says the law is holy. Verse 14, he says the law is spiritual. So the law is good, but it revealed the sinful nature in man. He said, I would not have known sin except through the law. The Ten Commandments, the tenth commandment, tripped Paul up. You should not covet anything that belongs to your neighbor. No coveting. Without some criterion of truth, every man does that which is right in his own eyes. But God's law is that criterion. What God says is the truth, is what we do. So he's saying then that that's the fact. The law reveals the fact of sin. It's there. And Paul felt it. Paul saw it. Now, he says also that the law reveals the occasion of sin. Verse 8. But sin, taking opportunity by the commandment, produced in me all manner of evil desire. See, it's possible to keep those first 10 commandments. They're very objective. Don't take the Lord's name in vain. Okay? Don't kill. Anybody here? I'll tell you, I have not killed anybody yet. Though I just got an idea from somebody. Well, I haven't killed anybody. It's not hard to keep that one, at least for me. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy? That doesn't apply to me now. But they're all very keepable, I believe. But Paul said, the first 9 I had no problem with. But he could say, all these have I kept from my youth up. According to the law, I was blameless, he said. So number 10 is one that tripped him up. Don't covet. That's doing your mind. See, if I go out and kill somebody, then everybody knows. Or if I curse, somebody knows. Take the Lord's name in vain. So that, everybody look at me, because I'm proud. I don't want anybody talking like that about me. See what I'm saying? So, but when he came to number 10, don't covet. Well, what do you covet? In your mind. And sometimes that leads to, I covet what that person has, and I'm mad at him. I might even do some things to him because I want what he has. I'd like to have that pickup truck or whatever. Huh? Sometimes I borrow it. Yeah, that's in my head. It may work out in my life too, but just having it in my head. What did Jesus say about adultery? if you look at a woman in order to have relations with her, you're committing adultery in your heart. See? So it's a little hard to keep away from. So he said, I was alive once, the law, but when the commandment came, sin revived, I died. He's not saying he was alive spiritually before this revelation. He realized he was a sinner. And sin is within himself, and he himself cannot get rid of it. Otherwise, if that is not true, then people, if they don't hear it, they are alive spiritually, then let's not do any more missions. Because once we get out there and tell them that they are sinners, then they're guilty. Before, they were alive. Now we're going to kill them. No, that's not true at all. So, he was lost, just as every son of Adam is lost, because he was born that way. But now he realized it. I thought I was okay, now I know I'm a sinner. It's like my lawn. You haven't seen my lawn. I have nice little flowers. Flowers are pretty, but not in my lawn. I have weeds. The sun shines on my lawn. It's the sun's fault. If I didn't have any sun, I wouldn't have that. No, not that. The sun shines, it shines on my lawn, and out come the flowers. Out come the weeds. Did the sun do it? No. The sun showed it. The sun brought out what was in there. And that's what the law is. You should not covet. Oh, out it comes. It's in there. And the sin is there. The law just reveals it. Now, the law reveals the effect of sin. For sin, he says, the commandment which was to bring life, I found bringing death. For sin, taking commandment, taking occasion by the commandment, it deceived me, and it killed me. It had power to reveal sin, and no power to remove the sin. For even the sacrifices of the law didn't remove sin, did you know? Yeah, all through this time, through the law, 1,500 years until Christ came. And all that time, they offered sacrifices. And the sacrifices didn't take away the sin. Hebrews 10:4. For it was not possible that the blood of bulls and goats could take away sin. See? So the law convicted, but the law was covered so God didn't judge them. Because God has to judge sin. Well, he covered it. And in a sense, gave an IOU. Okay, I owe you, within the Godhead, within his power. And then Christ came, and Romans 5:12 says he took all those sins of the world, put on Christ. The sins that were past. And boy, some people misused that one. It wasn't that my sins were past, the sins of the world were past, placed on him. My sin was placed on him, yours, all placed on him, and he died. So they look forward to the cross for forgiveness. We look back to the cross and say, we've already been forgiven. Christ died. So that's what we're saying here, that the law did not take away sin. The law doesn't reward you. You ever notice that? You stop by a policeman and say, now you have to be at the court next Tuesday. When you go in there, the judge says, oh, here he is. He kept the law. We're going to reward him. We're going to give him some money or whatever. No, you don't have that because the law doesn't reward. The law commands. The law shows your guilt. No, it punishes. There's a death penalty associated with each of the Ten Commandments. Did you know that? A death penalty, at least on the first nine. The law reveals sin and reveals the true character of sin, verses 12 and 13. Therefore, the law is holy. The commandment is holy and just and good. But sin, that it might appear sin, was producing death in me through what is good, so that sin through the commandment might become exceedingly sinful. Now, there are at least 15 words in the Old Testament for sin, and the same number in the New Testament. And all that many words for sin obviously tells us what God thinks about it. Sin is exceedingly sinful. Now, the high and holy standard of behavior demanded by the law leaves the sinner exposed, lost, and defenseless. It's over. What can I do? See, the law can't save. The law convicts. The law can't save. Do you ever see that commercial? In fact, there are several versions of it. I'm thinking of one where the people in a bank, and they're lying on the floor, and there's a guy dressed up as a guard. You can see people with guns, and the guy on the floor says to the guy, "Why don't you do something?" And the guy said, "Oh, no, I'm not to do anything about that. I'm here to tell if you have, if there's a robbery." There's a robbery. That's what the law is. The law, if you say to the law, "Why don't you help me?" "I'm not here for that." No, that's somebody else's job. Thank God there's somebody else's job, because there is a way. You're a sinner, you're going to hell. But that's what the law says. But the solution to all that is, there's another way. That's John 3:16. The law condemns. But Jesus has died. And John 3:16 tells all of it. "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him." I think I'm talking to believers. I have no reason not to believe that. But we mix with people out there who are under the law. They're condemned. They're going to hell. And our responsibility, but more than that, our privilege is to tell them that there is another way. Oh yeah, the natural man is headed for hell. And God says to us, go out there and tell him, rescue him before it's too late.